Let's start this podcast. And this week, we're going to start with a bevy of made by Google about hardware developments. I guess the most popular being the Pixel 4 right now. We had some tiny tidbits. I think the most interesting one was we saw a screen protectors for the Pixel 4 and the Pixel, for the Pixel 4 and the Pixel 4 XL, the first time we saw the smartphone. And what's notable is a very large cutout on the top right corner, oval in shape, pill-shaped. So everybody's assuming that is for Project Soaries radar detecting sensor.
It's funny to me how much evidence has been coming out that, yep, that's what's happening ever since Stephen published his big expose.
Yeah. Imagine if he didn't, though, and we just saw the sensors and we got some vague... I forgot the first person who reported it, but something along the lines of that there's the Pixel 4 having more sensors. And imagine if we just had that knowledge and the cutout. I wonder whether we would immediately jump to Project Soaries as what that cutout is for.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. It'd be more likely to be like, we would think some kind of time of flight maybe, or something along those lines.
Yeah, we would all think it would be in the service of face match.
Because that's what everything's been pointing to. I don't think we've seen anything in the software up to this point that points to solely yet.
No, nothing solid. I think XDA had some things about hand gestures.
That's right. That's right. You're right.
I don't think most people would be making the jump to solely control, which we're about 3 months out, and there's still some questions about how usable that would be. What do you imagine using Soaries for?
That's the thing. I don't really know what I when I pictured the Soaries launching, I didn't picture it on a phone. I pictured it on like the Home Hub or Nest Hub.
Yeah. Yeah. All the demos that were previously shown were on speakers and on smartwatches, which everybody agrees makes sense given the you don't really want to interact with it. 1.4-inch touchscreen.
Yeah, I can't think of what I would do with my hand that would need to be, I guess, a three-dimensional gesture, because on our phone right now, we already have two-dimensional gestures.
Yeah. I wonder if there are any gaming use cases for Soaries. Rock, paper, scissors. I think Soaries would end up being a cool controller for another device. I think you could do some interesting stuff with Soaries if you... But not. I don't think you would want to play the game and then be having your hand over the screen so that it gets recognized. So not an on-device experience, but I don't know, gaming potential could be very interesting for Soaries.
I mean, we could be looking at it wrong. There may be something that Soaries is being used for that's not interface control as we're imagining it right now.
Yeah, that'd be arguably more exciting, because right now what we're seeing is use controls, gestures to turn up the volume or silence your phone. And again, I think there are use cases. Let's say you're doing the dishes or something and your phone's next to you. But at the same time...
In that scenario, it would be your phone would be locked, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So if your phone is locked, would Soaries not be active? I don't know the power consumption levels on Soaries.
Yeah. I think the last read we got on it was pretty minimal. I'm sure that improved over the past several years since we last touched on Soaries. But the power considerations are going to be very interesting.
Because
it's always active, yeah.
That could be the trick. It could be that Soaries is for doing things on your phone without touching your phone, without your phone being unlocked. But then it's a matter of security at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess you first do a face match maybe to unlock it. But
convoluted.
But then you have to touch your device first. Maybe SOE is always on when maybe SOE is timed to the always on display, the ambient mode. I can see some integration there.
Yeah, that would give you media controls at the very least.
Yeah. But yeah, like again, like what everybody is talking about with SOE is these media controls and basic device controls. Google's ATAP division had this vision of rich interaction methods, and I don't know if we're going to get that, if those alternate ways of interacting with the device are going to be ready in time for the Pixel 4, or whether the Pixel 4 is going to have this really cool sensor that is underused for a few years until developer adoption increases. So that could be a scenario we're facing with this cool technology, as usual.
Yeah, that's true, because they're not preparing developers for it in the slightest. Like, there was no mention of that at all at I.O.
Yeah, so, I don't know. And I don't know if it's going to be a system-level feature, so I don't know what apps can do it until Google releases an SDK or something. So, might be a while. Yep.
So, the only other thing I'm thinking about is that the Pixel 4, when Google like made it official, they said, wait till you see what it can do.
Yeah.
Which in the context of SOLI, that makes a lot of sense, because it's not about, oh, look at our new phone, look what it can do.
Very true. And SOLI plus the camera, I think that's what Google is hyping on this year. If depending on whether you favor the Pixel 4 design or not, Google could be, as Google usually does, they do a hard technology approach and they try to win on software features and hardware features rather than physical design. So who knows? And a similar Pixel 4 news, we saw this report that Google is collecting face pictures of people's faces and giving them $5 gift cards in return for data collection.
$5, that's really funny.
Yeah. I would think they'd have better ways of doing of collecting face data. I honestly...
You would think so, but at the same time, you're just strolling up and seeing normal people.
Yeah, that's true. Normal people you want to get like a good snapshot of the population, especially if you're training.
Yeah, not be limited to just what Googlers look like, which I don't think that there's a stereotype among those, but you know, you never know. It's best to not be biased like that, I guess.
Yeah, this is an interesting behind the scenes of how Google's doing face match, I guess. So,
yeah.
That's... Go ahead.
No.
Yeah, so that's the Pixel 4 this week. It was a tiny, interesting touch. And I'm sure it'll always ramp up. So yeah, next is the Pixel Book, what we're assuming is the next Pixel Book. Just today, we saw the FCC of something, an FCC filing for something that we think is the next device. Take it away.
Yeah, so Quanta, the manufacturing company that's been responsible for the past two Pixel lineage Chromebooks, the Pixel Book and the Pixel Slate, filed a new FCC listing, which used a distinctly googly model number.
Yeah.
Which... So. Well, it just seems weird to me, like the model number that they used, it's G0, I want to say 21. Yeah, I think there was another thing that was 22, maybe that other mystery device.
Yes.
But
so
that
it's puts within it, the lineage, yeah.
It puts it within the Pixel line, rather than being in the Chromebook line, as it were. The model number is changed up.
So I would... The reason for this discrepancy, I would think, is this is very deep criminology that we're doing. But maybe it's a hint that Google is integrating the hardware even closer than past years. While all of us saw the Pixel Book and the window as being close to the Pixel 2, to all the Pixel phones, we all thought the Pixel slate was a bit of a, it didn't really fit, it was a bit disjointed. So again, going off this model number, maybe the hint is that design is getting even closer, getting more integrated with Google.
You know, I was thinking about that one earlier. The if you think about it, the Pixel slate looks closer to the Pixel 4 than it does the Pixel 3.
Yeah, that's also true. Without the window,
I don't think any of us could have guessed that they'd be taking away the window like that.
Yeah, and the distinctive feature that we all like, mind you.
Yeah,
it's a discussion for another day, but. What makes a Pixel in terms of design if it doesn't have that slate? Is Google going to stick with camera bumps going forward, and that's the shtick? Who knows?
Yeah, there's no telling. It's starting to get harder and harder to distinguish. The only real distinguishing feature is the G.
The G, and it's not even in the same place with the on the phone. It's in the very middle bottom. So I don't know what Google is going with design. Another is Google design, what's happening. But yeah, so what else do we learn about this chip?
So this new supposedly or presumably Pixelbook successor that we've been tracking for a while, Atlas, everything lines up with what was filed today from Quanta, which is basically just recertifying or having a change of identification for a previously existing chip, which in this case is an Intel Wi-Fi Bluetooth chip. It doesn't really tell us too much other than it's an Intel Wi-Fi chip, which we know was in the past, or we know Intel chips have been in the last two Pixel line. And it actually lines up pretty well with the way that the Pixel Slate made it through the FCC, which was the same process, just getting a change of identification for an existing chip.
Mm. In terms of timeline, the Pixel Slate made it through the FCC after it was announced and made by Google. So if anything, we might, and since we know Atlas has been in development for a while, so long that we thought it was coming out last year, we might be seeing an immediate side-by-side launch with the Pixel 4, we assume, this coming October. So there won't be a gap, and I think that'll do well to push Google's hardware story, unlike the Nest Hub Max, which you'll be talking about after.
did the Pixel Book release side-by-side with the Pixel 2? I don't remember.
I think there was also another gap, which...
Okay.
Google's 2 years in a row it's been late, so
yeah,
it changes.
Absolutely, it seems like they're prepped for that.
Yeah, but as you were saying, if we just know a Wi-Fi chip, we don't. You did point out that there is no Wi-Fi 6.
Yeah, there's no Wi-Fi 6. It's just Wi-Fi AC, which I think has been renamed Wi-Fi 5, because that's easy to roll off the tongue. There was some suspicion that maybe Wi-Fi 6 could get involved in Chrome OS, and I've got a little bit to share on that soon. But that doesn't seem to be the case for Google's next flagship Chromebook.
Yeah, given the given how long this Atlas appears to have been in development, I guess it makes sense why it's not yet ready. But still a shame, especially depending on how much this device costs.
If I had to take a guess, I would assume cheaper than the Pixel Slate, if only because it's based on the same hardware, while being not a tablet.
Not a tablet. I think speaking of pricing, we should definitely talk about the sale that the Google Store is running right now. So you can get $100 off any Pixel Slate. But the real deal is that it throws in a keyboard of your choice. You can do the first party made by Google keyboard, the fabric case, or you can do the Gboard, That's not Gboard. The Bridge G-Type keyboard, which is $159 versus $200. So this is probably one of the better deals in the Pixel slate if you're still interested. Yes, Google isn't making another one, but there's still what, 5 years of 4 years of Chrome OS support. So you're still going to get a lot out of it if you buy it now.
Yeah, 5 years it should be, because the Chromebook Pixel 2015 is getting supported until mid next year. Yeah, it should be.
So it's again, Google killed that tablet division, apparently. Well, confirmed. But you still can use a tablet if you want.
Absolutely. So which keyboard would you get?
I guess I'd have to go for safety and pick the G-Type.
Yeah, see, I would pick the same thing. That's the funny thing to me, is that the more affordable keyboard seems to be the better one.
Yeah, but at the same time, this is how the tablet should have been sold from the beginning.
Absolutely.
The keyboard should have been, Google should have appended an extra $100 for the keyboard to the price of the Pixel Slate. But it should have been sold as together. You should not have offered it separately as a $200 purchase, which is ridiculous. So,
does Microsoft Surface come with a keyboard? I don't actually know. I know. I don't think it used to.
I don't think. Yeah, I agree there. And
it might now.
It might now. There might be some bundling. Maybe the Pro definitely gets you a keyboard. But
that sounds right.
Microsoft's big thing is colors, and you can choose your own fabrics and whatnot. It's cute. I like that idea. But yeah. Do you think it's a good deal?
I mean, to save $260 because you're going to buy one of those keyboards anyway, it seems like a good deal. I mean, I thought they'd run more affordable than that in the past. Didn't they take they took a huge discount off of it for Prime Day the other day, didn't they?
I don't recall, but I know they took off $200 earlier sometime. But, there was another sale that took $200 off. But again, factoring the keyboard, I think you're still getting a better deal in general.
Fair enough.
So no interest from you if you didn't already have a Pixelbook.
Okay, if I didn't have a Pixelbook and I didn't have this Lenovo Yoga, which is way better for the same kind of money, I could see myself being interested in the Pixel Slate, especially coming with a keyboard and coming with the Bridge keyboard at that, because lappability matters to me.
Yeah, and it's, you basically get the laptop that most people want from the Pixel Slate. So,
while being able to break free and actually use it as just a tablet those couple times. Once in a while, I'll use a Chromebook as a tablet, but most of the time, no.
Yeah, you just want a laptop. So yeah, that's one sale going on. I believe it ends this weekend. So if you're still interested. And lastly, we had a little kerfuffle about the Nest Hub Max. A Google support page listed its availability as September 9th, and that date was removed, but Google confirmed to CNET that the Nest Hub Max is actually launching on September 9th. And we alluded to when you announce the product and when you actually release it early in the podcast, but this is taking way too long to launch.
Yeah, if I had to take a guess, I imagine they wanted to have another device to launch or to announce side by side with the Pixel 3a.
Definitely. A single announcement would have been weird, but I think more importantly, Google wanted the stage for the Nest rebrand and the commitment to privacy and security and that kind of stuff. They wanted the audience because, again, there's in no sense of the word were those developer-related launches for Google.
No. I mean, even I don't even think you can argue the Pixel 3a just because they're it. Yes, it's an affordable Android, but it's I don't know. It's not like drastically affordable. It's just affordable for what it offers.
Yeah. So that wasn't. I guess it's they just wanted the stage and the event, which is fine if that's what they want to do and figure out. But yeah. Anyways, so next up, Max. September. It is one month away from
less than a month if you think about it. Well, let's see. Was it 10? It was 10-9 this last year, right?
Yeah, 10-4.
Okay. It used to be 10-4. So yeah, okay. It is exactly a month. Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know what they're doing. When we demoed it at I/O in May, it seemed like final hardware.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it would have made more sense to have a product that they said it's available now, like they do with the Chromecasts usually. It's available now. Go out and buy it.
Yeah. So
for this year's for the October event,
Yeah. So I guess what this reveals is that the launch. Google's launches are still heavily geared towards the second half of the year or the final quarter of the year. And if they didn't do I/O, like the Nest Hub Max sort of query launched at the October event.
Yeah. But then again, thinking on it, there is that other hardware, there's that other home hardware that they're looking at in looking at the end of the year.
There's the case for not wanting to overshadow your speaker, which is objectively more boring.
Google's by comparison to a smart display, yeah.
Yeah, and in the broad scale, the smart display by itself is already a boring announcement. Its face matches the other unique feature. It physically looks the same. The hardware is just fine.
I don't know. I think the Nest security cam feature is... useful for those who don't mind having a Google-owned security camera in their house.
Yeah, that's what I'm mostly planning to use mine as, a security camera and something with a logic clock, because I use my Nest Hubs as clocks now.
Yeah.
You buying one, you have a Nest Hub already. Most people have Nest Hubs already.
I have a Nest Hub, but I'm not going to get the Nest Hub Max. I don't want cameras inside of my house. Outside, gotcha. Sure. Inside, no.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And there's no physical switch. That's the problem. On the Lenovo Smart Display, there's a physical switch to cover up the camera. But on the Nest Hub, the camera and microphone are physically tied. So there's no getting around that.
Yeah, it's probably someone's gonna sell a cover at some point, though. Undoubtedly.
Oh my gosh, those stickers! That I I cringe every time I see those on laptops, and I cringe every time I see them on laptops.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've had my camera light turn on when I wasn't doing anything with my camera, so.
Oh, really?
Yes. I was on Windows at the time, so I'm glad to be Linux and Chrome OS, but I've had it happen once before.
Okay, that's creepy.
It could have been a driver issue. It could be absolutely nothing, but it's happened.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, that rounds up our hardware discussion for this week. We have a slew of software-related tidbits, starting with Assistant. So, well, this is also related to the Nest Hub and the Google Home. But when you talk to your Google Home or your Nest Hub and ask it to turn off the lights, you will no longer get a command that's something like, okay, turning off lights. And this has been a very big feature request by people.
Even Googlers. I've seen Googlers on Twitter, like me whispering softly, hey, Google, turn off the lights. And it's got the megaphone emojis. Okay, turning off the light.
Oh, that's hilarious. It
kills me.
Yeah, so the new replacement is the chime. You get the simple chime. There are some specific use cases requirements. So the Nest Hub has to be in the same room as the lights you want to turn off. Any other command still gets the confirmation message. So that's
smart. Plus. Yeah, that's smart because that confirms. Yeah, it doesn't make noise in the room that you're in.
Yeah.
If you're trying to turn off this light, if you're trying to turn off the light in the room you're in, it doesn't make a noise. That's smart. Addresses the concern.
Yeah, so that's a very good addition for Google. It's a smart, clever way to do it. But that's a good feature for Google to add to Assistant. Another thing that Google Assistant is apparently testing is the ability to send text messages directly from the Android lock screen without having to unlock your device. This is presumably a voice match feature. And there's so many convenient use cases when you want to send a truly hands-free voice message, especially in the car. And it's enabled on my device. I've been able to test it and say the hard word and send a text message directly without having to unlock my device. You haven't had any luck enabling it, I believe.
Yeah, not the last time that I tried. I mean, I'm more than willing to try it again, but it just hadn't rolled out to my device.
So yeah, that's a very big usability if it actually rolls out fully. And I think that goes a long way to make Assistant on your phone even more useful.
Yeah, being able to just hands-free take care of things. I think about that kind of thing sometimes. Like, you know, let's say you get hurt or something.
Yeah,
it's an extreme scenario, but I got hurt or something, so I can say shmeshmoogle and yeah. have it get me help some kind of way, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So another thing, well, we should have talked about this with the smart light situation, but Google appears to be readying a custom assistant volume for smart displays and home speakers so that Assistant's output isn't tied to your regular media volume. There's usually a big difference between the music playing and your Assistant's responses. So this is kind of live in the Google Home for iOS app. It's not truly a separate slider. It's not truly you get to set the Assistant volume, but you get the ability to increase or decrease the assistant volume in relationship to your media volume. And you have two increments up, two increments down. The setting is live, but the actual feature is not ready yet. A firmware update is probably needed, but this is another big usability fix for Assistant.
Yeah, because I just think it's strange that they're hiding it within the equalizer settings, though.
Yeah, I think this is an obvious enough thing that Google could add to the actual Nest Hub, the actual sliding interface, the volume interface. So I don't know why they're not choosing to do a more conventional volume slider.
Yeah, it just doesn't. It seems like they're hiding it rather than trying to make it a usable feature, because yeah, sometimes the assistant is often far quieter than the music that I'm listening to, or vice versa.
Yeah, I would think vice versa is a super big issue here.
Yeah, but I would turn it down just in a general sense.
Again, I think we're waiting for the latest firmware on that, so soon, basically. Another. Back to Assistant on your phone. So the updates feed, which is the successor to Google Now, has this interesting resume your podcast card. which is which basically Google made a big deal about updates last year and Atlassian's I/O, but we really haven't seen them add new capabilities. And this is probably one of the more significant ones since the original launch. And I'm really waiting for Assistant to make that updates tab super powered.
Yeah, it seems a little strange to me though. I feel like updates and discover should just be one feed a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the original Google Now vision.
Yeah, because I don't check the updates feed, but discover is just one swipe away on my home screen. I'll end up scrolling it just mindlessly sometimes.
Yeah, I guess the problem with discover is they don't want the perception of your personal data being next to news articles and now ads. They need to make that separation. But I think many people would take the option to put updates to the left of the home screen rather than discover. But at the same time, Google does not want to cannibalize the traffic that is being generated by having news articles and having other articles so close to people's tab, to people's home screens for casual browsing.
And for ads, like you said.
Yes, for ads. Mm. But yeah, I do miss the old Google Now.
I still call it that sometimes.
Oh,
I barely know I barely knew the difference. It was just like, oh yeah, the Google Now thing. I think even Googlers still called it that for a while. Like I was when I was a long time ago in Fuchsia Code, they had prepped for what was actually the Discover feed, but in the code it was called the Now feed.
Yeah. So this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think Google's greatest branding failure has been people still calling it Google Now. It's embarrassing how often people still think it's Google Now. Not to the fault of the users, but to Google and the inability to change the perception from Google Now to Google Feed to now Google Discover. Presumably Discover is the long-term name going forward because it's an actual name. This is something generic, Feed, that doesn't say what it does. But hopefully, third time is the charm.
Yeah, honestly. It seems to have stuck around long enough now, right?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. Do you remember using the original Google Now?
I know I must have, but I don't remember it anymore. I know I must have.
Google Now is what got me. So I bought my first Android device, which is the first Nexus 7, because of Google Now. I thought of it as this crazy, magical, interesting thing that could be the future of how like we interact with devices. Instead of being apps and grids, we just interact with a solid feed. Of course, that never came to fruition, and that still hasn't come to fruition yet. But that's why I'm into Android. And this Google Now is partially responsible for why I have a career in Android right now in Google.
Come on. Yeah, instead, now we're left with a replacement that's a glorified Google News.
Yeah, and if it weren't for Google Assistant, it would be that vision would be fully dead.
Yeah,
so. And the last topic of the day is Google Photos, so Google Photos announced Gallery Go. The Google Photos team made a lightweight version of the Photos app that works offline, that's aimed at the next billion users. And I honestly had the feeling this was coming. I knew something from the Google Photos team was coming because they honestly haven't touched the main app in a few months, I would say, maybe a couple of weeks. And I have been wondering why there haven't been any major feature changes in the main primary Google Photos app. And now we know, because they've been working on this Gallery Go app.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It's just funny that it's timed so closely to Google Photos hitting 1 billion users.
Yeah.
Now they release an app that's literally focused at what they've been calling the next billion users.
Yeah, it's a very good narrative for them. And have you, Gallery Go, it looks basic. It looks like Google's other Go apps optimized for devices with a gig of RAM.
It looks like the kind of app that could take off like Files did, though.
Yeah.
For people that don't want the cloud and all that.
Yeah. I guess the fear is that, why isn't Files Go your gallery app?
Yeah. But
should be the same thing, maybe? Yeah, it's
that's tricky.
It's tricky because Files Go is already has the Wi-Fi transfer stuff and the removal. It has a dedicated use case. But at the same time, if Gallery Go doesn't take off as like Files Go, Files did, there's a scenario where it just gets bundled into Files. So
yeah,
it's performance-wise, I've never had problems with the Google Photos app, so...
Right. We haven't necessarily been using low-end phones, though.
I have not. And it looks fine. It's clearly an evolution of Google Photos by putting that top carousel at the very top of the app. I personally would find that annoying because you just want your grid of photos sometimes. And the best part of Google Photos is that they're just letting you have that grid versus trying to do other curation and content. So Gallery Go probably isn't for me, and it probably isn't for most people.
Yeah. I mean, they announced it in Google for Nigeria, so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely for developing and... Yeah.
Yeah, developing markets, developing phones.
Yeah.
But yeah. Again, this is Google continuing the optimizing for the next billion users. I guess it kind of ties into our discussion about Android and feature phones.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that because I'm wondering how much more ecosystem they're going to be building. Like how many more Go apps are they going to need for that next billion users? Is there going to be a Messages Go?
Messages is it's already optimized for low power devices. They've never made a big deal about it, but it's actually pretty optimized for low power devices. So I'd be curious if they end up doing a Messages Go. The fragmentation on that would be insane, though.
Or Duo Go. Duo Go has a good ring to it.
It does. It really does. But again, that's... they already market Duo pretty well to developing countries.
That's true. With all the, especially with the Cricket advertising and everything that we're doing. As everyone learned the hard way.
Yeah. That app is, I give it a year before it becomes a social network.
Oh boy. Right. Another one.
Which is fine, though. It's end-to-end encrypted messages, imaging. I would use it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that a social network needs to develop. That's what Google didn't do right. It needs to develop naturally, not, here's a social network, please use it.
But the question of this Duo thought experiment is whether you would be harming the user base who likes video. I think people like Duo, but I'm not sure how in love they are with Duo.
I don't know. I only use it because it's easy.
Yeah, it is very easy. And Google would be... They have to be very careful not to disrupt the user base. But I think there is a scenario where you simply just add messages and Google has a low-key hit.
Do you open the Duo app to call people?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I don't use the phone integration or contacts integration.
Because that's the only way I use it. I'll just be in messages and I'll be texting my wife and I'll just decide, it'd be easier to just call her and I just tap the video button and I'm in Duo.
Yeah, it's interesting to think of Duo as a service versus an app. Duo has a lot of relations to Google Play services, like the ability to place a call to somebody who doesn't have the Duo app installed. And like, it's perfect. I think everything is there for Google to make Duo a messaging app.
I mean, they started on it with the video recording.
Yeah, so. Voice sending stories and that kind of thing. As a one-to-one messaging app, Google has the opportunity to do do something really interesting with Duo in the long run. But I guess it's all dependent on RCS. Like, how long is this latest RCS push going to last? And when do they start realizing Duo have a really good shot at Duo doing something interesting?
Yeah, I guess it's just that trick having to deal with different markets and trying to get them to agree on one solution, because I'm sure they could get Duo to high adoption outside of the US. It's just a matter of getting it adopted higher than text messaging in the US.
Yeah. And again, I think developing around the world, for developing countries, Duo has a big potential, has a big market, has a big familiarity. So if Google just to push the shift, they'd have something.
Yeah, especially if they timed it well with maybe privacy or any kind of controversy around Facebook. If they timed it well, it could really blow up.
Yeah. Yeah. I like our tangent into Duo based on files on Mason Gallery Go. So yeah, it's a bit of a short podcast this week. Kind of reflects the news.
It really does.
Yeah. You have any other shout outs, any other topics you want to quickly discuss while we're here?
Honestly, no, nothing's really been coming to mind. Anytime I think about like, oh man, what am I excited for? What's the next thing? What's this? What's that? I just keep coming back to Stadia.
Yeah, same. It's so new and it's a world of coverage that's going to be very different for us as a site because of we're not having a distinctly gaming background. So it's going to be a very promising time for us.
Yeah, we don't necessarily have a 9-to-5 games now, do we?
No, we don't. And it's a brand new world, I'll call it, of what Google is doing at Stadia. And it's almost August. Next week's August.
Right.
Closer.
Yep, 3 months. Fingers crossed, come on.
Fingers crossed. And I think that's a good place to end this episode. You can tune into Alphabet Scoop every week. We record every Wednesday. We're going to have another Wednesday show next week. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and of course, 9to5google.com. Thank you to Kyle. Thank you to everybody else for listening, and see you all next week.
See ya.
Bye.